Chapter 13. Queequeg's Coffin. Sailing from the southwest, the Pequod was approaching Formosa and the Bashi Islands. She was going to sail between them from the China Sea into the Pacific Ocean. Ahab now spent much time looking at charts of the eastern coast of Japan, checking the course of previous voyages. His desire for revenge on Moby Dick meant that he became angry when someone made him remember he was responsible for the ship and the crew. One day, there was a terrible argument between him and Starbuck.
"Captain Ahab," said Starbuck, "the oil in the hold is leaking out of some barrels, sir. We need to stop sailing and get them all out of the hold so we can find the ones that are leaking."
Ahab answered angrily,
"What, stop the ship for a week so that we can check a few barrels, now when we are so near Japan?"
Starbuck answered calmly,
"We either need to do that or waste more oil in one day than we can find in a year. We will waste what we came 20,000 miles to find."
"Yes, we will," replied Ahab, "unless we find it."
"I was speaking of the oil in the hold, sir, not of Moby Dick," replied Starbuck, understanding that Ahab was thinking only of the whale and not the oil. "What would the Pequod's owners say, sir?"
"Mr. Starbuck," shouted Ahab, "I won't stop the ship to lift the oil out of the hold. What do I care about the owners? Let them stand on Nantucket Beach and shout as loudly as they can. I am the captain of the ship, the only real owner of it. Now leave me!"
"Captain Ahab," said the mate carefully, though his face was red with anger, "I must speak about the owners to you. Can we not try to understand each other a little better, sir?"
Captain Ahab's answer was to pick up a gun and point it towards Starbuck, crying,
"There is one God that is Lord over the earth, and one captain that is Lord over the Pequod. Leave me!"
For a long moment, Starbuck just looked angrily at Ahab. Then he slowly and calmly turned away, saying,
"You have made me angry, sir, but there is no reason to be afraid of me and what I might do. Ahab should be afraid of himself. Yes, be afraid of yourself, old man."
After Starbuck had left Ahab, the old man spoke quietly to himself.
"Starbuck has become brave. What was that he said? Ahab should be afraid of himself. He speaks the truth."
Then Ahab disappeared into his cabin, but sometime later he returned and searched for Starbuck.
"You are a good man, Mr. Starbuck," he said quietly to the mate.
Then he shouted to us all, "Bring down the sails and bring up the barrels!"
I wondered why Ahab had changed his mind and decided he knew that it was dangerous to have arguments with Starbuck. The crew might mutiny if they knew that their first mate was unhappy with the situation on the ship. It was discovered that the last barrels we put in the hold were not leaking, so more and more were brought up onto the deck. Not only were the barrels of oil brought up, but also barrels filled with fresh water, bread, and meat. In the dark hold, water mixed with oil and dirt, making it a horrible place to work. Poor Queequeg, who had done much of the work, suddenly became very ill. He continued to work for several days, but at last he could not stand, and he was carried to his hammock, close to death. Queequeg became so thin that his bones started to show through his skin. However, as his illness got worse, he seemed to accept calmly that his death was coming. He lay quietly in his hammock, and the rolling sea seemed to be taking him gently to his last rest. One gray morning at dawn, Queequeg told me that he wanted a wooden coffin in the shape of a small boat made for him. He had seen coffins like this in Nantucket, and they were similar to the boats that people from Kokovoko were put into after their death. These boats were pushed out to sea so that dead people could float away to the stars in the sky. Queequeg said that he would hate to be thrown from the Pequod, wrapped in his hammock, which was what normally happened if a seaman died on a ship. And so, a boat-shaped coffin was made for Queequeg, and was put on the floor next to his hammock. Then he called for his harpoon, and asked for the pointed metal end to be put in the coffin along with his oar from the whaleboat, a bottle of fresh water, and some ship's biscuits. When this was done, he asked us to put him into his coffin along with his things. He lay without moving for a few minutes, then asked me to get Yoho, his little god, from his bag. Finally, he said quietly, "Rarmai," which means, "It is good enough," in his language, and asked us to put him back in his hammock. However, although Queequeg had prepared to die, he recovered from the illness, and soon he had no need for his coffin. First, he slowly got up from his hammock. Then, after a few quiet days on deck, eating huge amounts of food, he suddenly jumped up. He stretched his arms and legs, practiced throwing his harpoon, and said he was ready to hunt a whale. After that, he started to use the coffin as a sea chest. By now, we were in the Pacific Ocean, somewhere I had wanted to see since I was a boy. This calm, blue ocean was just as wonderful and mysterious as I had expected it to be. But Ahab did not care about its beauty. For him, this was the sea where he would finally meet the hated white whale. Indeed, even in his sleep he cried out, "The white whale spouts thick blood." It was a few weeks later that we met another Nantucket ship, the Bachelor. The crew were full of joy because they had just filled her last barrels of oil and were about to sail home. The lookouts on the mastheads had red scarves on their hats. There were flags flying from the rigging, and the jawbone of their last whale was hanging from the bow. It was as if they were all on holiday. As the Pequod and the Bachelor passed each other, the Bachelor's captain stood on the quarterdeck, looking as happy as his men. Ahab, standing on his quarterdeck also, looked grim and thoughtful.
"Come aboard,"
cried the Bachelor's captain, lifting a glass and a bottle in the air.
"We have had great success on this voyage. Even my cabin is full of barrels of oil." "Have you seen the white whale?"
was Ahab's reply.
"No, I've heard of him,"
said the other captain politely, but without much interest.
"But I don't believe there is such a whale. Come aboard." "No, sail on," said Ahab. "You're all too happy for me."
And so the two ships went on their ways in different directions. The crew of the Pequod silently watched the crew of the Bachelor happily sailing home. But the crew of the Bachelor never looked back. Ahab, looking at the disappearing stern of the Bachelor, pulled a small bottle of sand out of his pocket and looked from the ship to the bottle. The two actions were connected, for I knew that the bottle contained sand from Nantucket. Maybe the Bachelor had left some of her luck with the Pequod, for the next day four whales were killed, one of them by Ahab when I was in his boat. It was almost the end of the day before the fight with this whale was finished. The sun was going down, and it was as if the day and the whale were dying at the same time. Ahab watched the whale behave in the way that dying sperm whales always do, turning its head toward the warmth and light of the sun.
"There is a lesson for me here, whale," he said. "You remind me that even the sun cannot help you, and nothing can help me either. I am like you and everything else in the sea, and, like the sea itself, I cannot rest."
Three of the whales were tied beside the Pequod by the time night fell, but we had to spend the night at sea with our dead whale because we were too far from the ship. Early in the morning, before dawn, I heard a strange whispered conversation between Fadala and Ahab. The blackness of the night was all around them, so that they seemed like the last two men in a watery world.
"I have had a dream of my death again," whispered Ahab to the other man. "I have told you before," replied Fadala, "that I shall die before you."
"Yes, you have told me," said Ahab. "You said you will die before me, but before I die, I will see you again. I do not understand this prophecy, but I believe you, and I believe that this means I will kill Moby Dick before I die."
"And here is another prophecy," said Fadala,
looking crazy in the half-light before dawn.
"Only rope can kill you."
Ahab laughed when he heard this.
"Rope! You're talking about death by hanging. That cannot happen to me. Perhaps I will never die."
Both men were silent again. The dawn came. The rest of the crew woke up, and before midday, the dead whale was brought to the ship.